Well, one saint that you may not be familiar with is someone called Crispin, or Saint Crispin's Day. That was on October the 25th, is the day that Saint Crispin's is remembered and celebrated. Saint Crispin, along with his twin brother, Crispinian, there's two good names, right? They were twins who lived in the 3rd century A.D., and these twins were from a noble family, a Roman family, and they became Christians. And they went north with the gospel and with Christianity and took it north in the area north of Italy, northern Italy and beyond, into those lands occupied by a people called the Gauls. And they took Christianity to them, and they preached to them, and they made a living. They were shoemakers, they were cobblers, and they made a living by doing shoemaking at night and taking care, you know, of their needs that way, and then serving the Lord by day. In 286 AD, when persecution broke out in that area, they were brought on trial, had millstones thrown on, hung on their neck and thrown into the river. Somehow they survived that. And then they were beheaded. And so later on, Crispin was declared sainthood. Well, the story has a slightly other aspect to it, because Shakespeare wrote a very famous play called Henry V. And in this play, there is something called the St. Crispin's Day speech. The play is about Henry V and a famous battle that happened October 25th, 1415, St. Crispin's Day. It's one of the most celebrated victories in England's history. It was during that period known as the 100 Year Wars, and they're fighting with the nation of France. And on this particular day, they were gathered in northern France at a place called Azincourt, and the English were greatly outnumbered. There were many, many more French, and it didn't seem as though they had a chance at all. Well, Henry V went out with his men. He went out into the battle and fought shoulder to shoulder with his men. Charles VI, the French king, he stayed home. He said he didn't feel well that day. Shakespeare wrote about this play and this event, and he wrote something called the St. Crispin's Day speech. And it's what Henry said, what Henry V said to his troops before they went out to battle, to, you know, against these insurmountable odds, probably definitely to get slaughtered. You know, they were so outnumbered, and yet King Henry V gives this speech. Well, this speech has been quoted just an unusual amount of times. And it's usually used when somebody's in a difficult spot or people are outnumbered or in some kind of a battle or discouraged. During World War II, Laurence Olivier, the actor, delivered the St. Crispin's Day speech on a radio program to boost British morale during the war. And Winston Churchill was so impressed by it that he asked Laurence Olivier if he would produce and do a play of Henry V, of Shakespeare's Henry V. Throughout the years, various politicians have taken pieces of this speech and used it. George Washington, a part of this speech was used in a song for George Washington's inauguration. George Bush used language from this speech to encourage his staff during the times of the tight Al Gore-George Bush race in Florida. And he took lines out of the St. Crispin's Day speech. There's a particular phrase that many like to use, band of brothers. Right, we've heard that. Perhaps Stephen Ambrose wrote a book called Band of Brothers. Recently, there's been a miniseries on television called Band of Brothers. And various movies, many, too many to mention, have drawn on this speech in one way or another and used some lines out of it. The man who shot Liberty Valance, right? There's someone used a line in that movie. Tombstone, Doctor Who, and even a movie called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. In 2016, there was a video game invented called We Happy Few. Well, I'm going to read this part to you, but just imagine it's not a video game, it's not a movie, it's not somebody trying to be, you know, relevant or cool, but it's King Henry V, and it's the day of a battle, and he's up against unbelievable numbers facing the French, and he's trying to rally his little ragtag army. This story shall be the good man teach his son, and Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered, we few, we happy few, we band of brothers. For he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother, be he ne'er so vile. This day shall gentle his condition. And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhood cheap, whiles any speaks that fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day. Why so inspiring? Why so many people in so many places want to quote from this St. Crispin's Day speech? Well, Pastor Lee Eklov says this: it stirs us to be braver in the obscurity of the ordinary, more daring in the unseen battles of our lives, to imagine more for ourselves, to see that ordinary people, even against great odds, can rise to great things. And there's no shortage of lists or of people mentioned like this, as you well know, in God's Word. It is full of these types of situations. We're familiar with Hebrews chapter 11. And that list of people, some known, some unknown, who stood for God, who died because of what they believed in, who held their ground, who were faithful. Today we have several readings that talk about this. One from the Apocrypha, written in the 200 BCs, 200 years before Christ. And we've talked about Ben Sira on other occasions, and how his writings influenced the early Christians, and how Jesus was familiar with this rabbi's teaching. And the first 43 chapters of Ben Sira are about wisdom, their wisdom literature, wise sayings like Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. And then in chapter 44, Ben Sira switches to mention this group of people that many don't remember or know. They're nameless. You wouldn't know who they are, and yet God remembers them. Their righteous deeds will not be forgotten. Their obedience to God's covenant will not be forgotten. The book of Revelation, our New Testament reading, we are faced with that great multitude around the throne. No one can number them. Who are they? Who is this? The writer asks. They are those that are clothed in white. They've been washed in the blood of the Lamb. They've come out of the great tribulation. They're the followers of Jesus. They're Christians. They are people like Crispin, who nobody thought much of. He was just a forgotten shoemaker, right? A forgotten shoemaker that didn't seem to matter. And around the throne of God are these people that nobody thought of or remembered. And yet they are washed of the blood of the Lamb. They are the followers of Jesus Christ, forgotten to the world, but there they are at the throne of heaven. Jesus, in Matthew, in the Beatitudes, has his own list of who's who the heroes are, who the famous people are, the poor in spirit, those who mourn, the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers, those who are persecuted for his name's sake. And so even Jesus has this list of heroes that he mentions. Tucked away in that very obscure Old Testament book that perhaps you don't read very often, First Chronicles, is one of my favorite sections, one of my favorite lists of people like this, of saints. There are two chapters there, First Chronicles 11 and 12. And it's easy to miss, but it's a list of King David's mighty men and their exploits. The chronicler lists these people who rallied around a ragtag army. It really was. It was a shepherd boy who got a bunch of other farmers and ragtag army and went up against Saul. They went up against evil. People like Jashobeam and Abishai, who on separate occasions, as individuals, they stood against 300 others. One against 300. And they defeated their enemy. These two followers of David. People like Eleazar. Eleazar, when at one point there was a battle with the Philistines and it was so bad that the entire army retreated. But not Eleazar. He stood his ground and defeated the Philistines on his own. People like Benaniah. It tells us that Benaniah went up against a 7.5-foot Egyptian warrior. And he disarmed him and slayed him with his own sword. And then there are three that are very special, right? You'll remember those. As David was hiding in the caves from Saul and his vast army, he's worn out, he's discouraged, he's beaten down, and he says, "Oh, that I could drink from the waters of Jerusalem," right? "Oh, that I could drink from the waters of that holy place." And these three guys sneak out in the middle of the night, they go through enemy lines, they do something absolutely unbelievable, and they bring back their king a glass of water. And David is so overcome that he can't drink it. He dumps it out and offers it to the Lord. These are people who maybe never felt heroic. They had never before risen to a great or gallant battle. Maybe they were farmers who didn't even own a sword. They were unknown, ordinary people, but people of God. And they rallied around their king to serve him to the end, no matter what the risk, no matter what the outcome. They rallied around their king. Well, you know that the weapons that we fight with, that we serve our King Jesus with, are not the weapons of the world. They're not clubs and spears and swords. Paul tells us they are spiritual weapons, and they're even more powerful. He says to the Corinthians, they have divine power, and they demolish strongholds. They demolish strongholds. Put on the armor of God, the sword of the Spirit, the Word of God, the love of Christ to the lost. These are our weapons, our faith, even when everything seems to be against us, our hope, when circumstances are insurmountable, the weapon of truth and justice and prayer. Why did David's men have such courage for their king? Many of them forsook they had forsaken their old loyalties, their old way of life. There were many of them who worked for Saul and served Saul, and some of them were even associated with neighboring Gentile pagan kings and lands. And this group of people, David said, "Will you serve me? Will you forsake your old loyalties and serve me as the true king of Israel?" And one of these guys, his name was Amasai. He was the head of the 30. David had his army, but there were 30 that were very special, very brave. And Amasai was a guy that was ahead of the 30. And when David poses this question to him, Amasai, it says this in the Bible, "The Spirit clothed Amasai, chief of the 30. And he said, 'We are yours, O David, and with you, O son of Jesse. Peace, peace to you, and peace to your helpers, for your God helps you.'" And that is our place. We are yours, O Christ. We are yours. We are with you, O son of Jesse. Peace, peace, peace to your helpers, for your God helps you. And even though at times we are outnumbered, circumstances are too much, it seems as though the evil and the strongholds are just everywhere and unable to come down. And you cannot win, you cannot get out of this situation, be it personal or be it public or societal. Even when we're outnumbered. Conclude today with something that our new bishop said yesterday that I thought was very inspiring as he gave his address to convention, and Larry and I were there yesterday. And the bishop, as he addressed us, said that he's a numbers guy. He said, "You know, I like numbers. I like charts. I like spreadsheets. And I love that stuff." And he said, "I've been looking at the numbers of our diocese and of our church. And," he said, "they don't look good. The numbers don't look good." And then he said this, "But numbers are data. They are not destiny. Numbers are data. Data only. They are not destiny."